I have concerns.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, what are they?
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 410 for the week of June 6, 2022. I am Exploding Heads of Plenty, David T. Cole, and I'm here with second Ashley, Sarah D. Bunting.
Sorry, Ashley.
Chimp champion, Tara Ariano.
They don't cry.
And this episode's L.A. Train, Will Hines.
Q rating, 2.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he is an actor, comic, improviser, podcast host. You've heard him on the show before. It's Will Hines. Hello, Will.
Will, welcome.
Greetings. Hello, everybody. So that's my pleasure to be here.
Will is here to talk with us about The Boys. And this Amazon Prime Video show has been our lead topic for both of its first two seasons. So you probably remember what it's about from when we talked about it those times. In a world where superheroes are real and work for a giant consumer goods, energy, and media company called Vought, which, as we learned last season, was founded during World War II by Hitler's favorite Nazi doctor, some of those marquee superheroes in what they call the Seven are fine too enthusiastic about Vought's not-so-secret fascist agenda. Others are double agents working to destroy the company from within in concert with the titular boys, who are CIA-affiliated agents of chaos. And here's a useful new weapon in The Boys' arsenal for season 3, V24, an injectable drug that gives the user temporary superpowers. The first three episodes dropped on Friday. I have watched the whole season, brag, because I reviewed it for Vanity Fair, which we will link in the show notes. But I'm going to do my best not to talk about events from later in the season, because Amazon's do not reveal lists for each episode are intense.
Yeah, we have to give away. We have to give back all our stuff if we talk about season 4.
Including the dogs.
Yeah. Everything. They're like, everything on your wish list got to come back.
You know, publicists are here to help you until they're yelling at you and then they get real mad. So let's do the 10 check-in. Let's go around the horn. Will, should our listeners watch season 3 of The Boys?
I mean, I loved it. I'm a sucker for this show. I really dug it.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes, but, and we'll get into it in a sec.
Dave.
Yes, I like exploding heads and gooey things, and this is giving me more of the same, kind of with Will.
I agree down the line, other than the butt part, which I'm eager well, to hear what that is.
The butt part was kind of a big deal in the first episode, spoiler.
Will. All right, so let's start here. Will, I personally enjoy The Boys because I am not so secretly anti-Marvel, and I enjoy the way The Boys panders to me, as you said in your answer to the Chen check-in. But you are such a comic book guy. You have a comic book podcast. How do you square this circle?
I mean, I think like anybody who really, really loves something knows the best what's wrong with it in a way. Like when you truly are obsessed with something, you kind of learn the flaws better than even the casual haters. So like, I'm well aware of both the weirdness of comic books in general and also like the MCU's particular kind of dominant blandness. So like I appreciate there being sort of other parties in our dictatorship of superhero media just because they exist as another option, and even better when they're pretty good. Like The Boys is pretty solid. Like it's fun. It's a page turner, good solid cliffhangers, and just when you settle down, something gory happens. I actually feel like The Boys and The Sopranos has a similar number of surprise murders. Just like, and The Sopranos is a far superior show in terms of like emotional depth, but similarly.
Wow, bold statement to make. But I know.
But like, but they're similar in that like every now and then just somebody just gets brutally murdered in The Sopranos out of nowhere. And every now and then just somebody gets brutally like sliced open with intestines a poppin' in The Boys.
Perhaps.
I square the circle because I don't mind that I've got room in my appetite of comics for the mainstream and the indie. This kind of falls somewhere in between. And I just like that it's fun. I like that it's fun. It doesn't take itself seriously enough to stop with the good stuff.
That's true.
I don't know. I might just be dumb, but I just enjoy every time they're sort of like, you know, my favorite part of The Boys is whenever they do, and this is in all the seasons, non-spoilery, they'll have like, you know, a movie or a TV show dramatization within that universe of something mm-hmm. where we saw the real events.
Yes.
But there's this like sugar-coated, made for the public, total full of spin version. Mm-hmm. I crack up out loud at those every time. The joke never gets old to me.
Yeah.
You know, when it's like Homelander's our greatest, you know, whatever, savior. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I cackle. How do I square the circle? I'm dumb and easy. That's how I square the circle.
I also appreciated that, like, that moment that you're talking about where we see the movie version of Homelander finding out Stormfront's real deal. And in the movie version, yeah. she's played by Charlize Theron, which is ha.
Yeah.
But then the battle that they have, it's just two lasers coming at each other. You don't even see people. And it's just like, yes, that is what all these stupid movies come down to. It's like lasers yeah. versus laser. Who gives a shit? Again, I'm showing my bias, I guess. But one of the show's targets is toxic fandom, which is both easy and also increasingly urgent to call out for reasons the show makes clear. Are these story moments too didactic for you, or are you generally on board, sympathetic to them?
I hear what you're saying. They like I think of them as just easy. Like, it's very easy to make fun of toxic fans. It's very easy to make of the manipulative corporate overlords. But for some reason, I love it. I love it every time. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely more excited for The Boys than I am for the next Marvel movie, you know, mm-hmm. even though I'll watch them all. But like, so I don't know what the right formula is. I don't know how it is that they're so good. Is it the casting? The casting's really good in The Boys. Is that mm-hmm. like it? Like, everybody looks perfect for the roles.
No, they do.
The right amount of dumb and good looking and stuff. Like, The Deep is one of the most brilliant casting choices I've ever seen. The guy is both bro-y, dumb, and kind of vulnerable in mm-hmm. a way that I really sort of admire.
Yeah. Same question to you, Sarah, since we also have a lot of experience with toxic fandoms. How do you feel about the show's take?
Well, I should say first that the but in my answer is really that, like, I really like the show. I enjoy it. I think it's very watchable, despite being, you know, disgusting. Mm-hmm. But I like that part.
Yeah.
And I do think there's some, like, anti-fan fan service happening, but I'm comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
The but is more like this cynicism about the culture and the country is absolutely relentlessly scabrous. And if you are looking to escape from
yes.
doomy feelings about the future of America, mm-hmm. this is not going to do that. But there are so many, like, little Easter eggs about conspiracy stuff. Like, someone at some point is like, where is Shelley? And I just was like, pause it. Like, yeah. So good. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Butcher just calling literally everyone cunts, including babies. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Swera Bunting loves that shit.
Yeah.
But I think that it's so... It has a really good ear for, like, exactly how much a viewer can take.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. it, like, there's a line that it rides. And also, the acting is unbelievable. Anthony Starr is mm-hmm. amazing.
He's
like,
so
the,
good.
The way that he can almost, like, Homelander is, like, evil.
Yeah.
But you still have that thread of sympathy. Like, the way that he can look utterly crestfallen and sad mm-hmm. about yeah. how shitty he knows he is, but then also look just terrifying. He's so good. Perfectly cast. Chase Crawford as the Deep is perfect. Like, everybody in this understands the assignment is overused, but they really mm-hmm. do. So I think it's very watchable and compelling, and it definitely is, like, you want to keep going. It definitely is a page turner, but it's not a fucking pick-me-up, so yeah. if that's, like, if you are looking to sort of be soothed or to escape, I think you would be better off with a Marvel property mm-hmm. that is a little more opaquely optimistic about mm-hmm. things, as far as you know. So
right.
I will counter that in saying, you know what picks me up? When half a guy's head explodes and he's still alive for a good 50 minutes, just gurgling in an alley somewhere. I mean, if I saw that in real life, I would be scarred forever. But when I see my entertainment and there's, like, this person, she works in the government. She's like Dr. Pimple Popper, but, like, 12, right? Like, she's just, like, always on. She's dialed to 12 all the time. Mm-hmm. And, like, just seeing stuff like that, or the Crimson Countess exploding a giant Homelander park mascot, you know, in front of all these kids and stuff. Like, yeah, it's, like, grim on paper, but in the show universe, those moments of ultraviolence and, like, you know, Fangoria plus deluxe moments are actually do lighten the mood in a very weird, specific way to the show.
Yeah, I don't, it's not the gore, like, you know, what I want more of from AOC is for her to be trepanning people, like, sure, that's fine. I totally agree with you, Dave, actually, it's more the attitude, like, it's not the gore that's going to be too much for some people, I think it's the show's...
It's more like the Stormfront fandom storylines and, like, how, like, that really doesn't feel like a departure from what is happening now in the way that exploding Homelander Park mascots do.
Yeah. I mean, it's well done and watchable. It's just not, you know, encouraging. So, but I agree with you. Split some heads.
If you're feeling bad about the world, it's not going to help you. I totally agree. But there is a joy to this that I think is missing from, like, there's like a seriousness about some, I don't know, like the Batman movie, the Matt Reeves Batman movie, which was beautiful and atmospheric, but also just like a bummer to me.
Yeah.
Not a bummer in a deeply principled way, just like the mood was a bummer. Like it was just so grim. And the Boys is having fun.
Yeah. Boys, though, fun is Punisher.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the Boys comic books I never liked. The Boys comic books were a little too satisfied with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bet you didn't think we were going to go there kind of vibe that sort of grossed me out. And grossed me out just like, I don't want to talk to people who are like, can't believe they went there, dude. They're like edgy. They're like twisted. My humor's twisted, actually. Like, The Boys was that kind of person to me. But the TV show is somehow lighter. It's funnier. It's got more of a sense of playfulness or sense of humor, and that I am able to enjoy the exploding heads. Smart details too. Like, I like when at the fair when the French gentleman of The Boys observes somebody eating a hamburger with a bun as two glazed donuts, and he's like just disgusted at that prospect, and
but also turned on. Yeah,
yeah.
Maybe I'm projecting.
Yeah. I don't remember him being turned on, but maybe, Sarah, maybe that was in there. There's just good little, or the fact that Judi Dench is going to appear on Homelander's birthday special.
Yes.
Or when they flash back to the 80s, you hear a Spanish version of Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go instead of just Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. Just there's just like 10% more on all the specifics that are smart and fun. That might make the difference.
Yeah.
The bones of it are cliche. You know, let's make fun of consumerism, but the specifics are more artful. Maybe that's it. Or maybe I just like exploding heads too. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the consumerism part, like when they go to the theme park and we see BLM, BLTs, and LGB turkey legs,
because
they're trying to co-opt all of that in Brave Maeve's Inclusive Kingdom when we know how things actually are in the company. That's very smart. Do we care about Homelander's kid? I'll go first. I don't. Will, your thoughts?
It works for me. I think it does a lot of things to the story that is helpful. Mm-hmm. I mean, when somebody is as powerful as Superman, logically, nothing should stop Superman from just murdering the whole planet, which Alan Moore once did a comic book where that happens, and it's really sad and depressing. So we have an evil Superman. So the only thing that's going to stop is like humanity stuff, you know, falling in love with Stormfront, having a kid, even if it's for total egotistical, narcissistic reasons, he wants to survive. So those boundaries make the story possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I appreciate that. I feel bad for the kid actor. I feel bad for all kid actors.
Yeah.
I think just being a kid actor is deeply humiliating, even when the kids are brilliant at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish the kid could just be off screen, because I like the effect he has on the story, but maybe the scenes with him always are a little cringy, maybe not, but not for the performer's fault.
The character is used sparingly.
Yeah.
It's not like a Obi-Wan Kenobi, where it's like, well, here's Obi-Wan's story, but it's, you know, Princess Leia's always there. You know, it's not, we're not doing that. I mean, it really still is Billy Butcher running around calling everybody a cunt. Like, it's still fundamentally that show, even though there's a little mini Homelander running around.
Yeah, calling people a cunt ratio to appearance of kid is still way in the favor of calling people cunts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when Obi-Wan did it that once in episode two, I was shocked. But
I mean, it served the story. I think we can agree. As someone who enjoys a good, did you check up your butt almost as much as Dave and I do, Sarah, please tell us how you responded to Termite's pee hole moment in the season premiere.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. My husband could not watch. He was like looking through his fingers. He was like, I just don't. And like the way that we thought it was going to go wrong and how it actually did go wrong, we're not aligned.
No.
And then his torso was no longer aligned with his pelvis. Spoiler. It was a lot. And I was there for it. But it was just like, this is the show immediately being like, hey, remember us? This is not for babies. I thought it was great. Dan was, I think, is still scarred and upset. That's okay. He continued watching the available episodes, so wasn't that scarred or upset?
I watched it 10 times in a row. What does that mean?
But it wasn't, it like the visual of him going in. And then, of course, like the end of that whole sequence where he sneezes and explodes inside of a person.
Yeah.
But it was also like the local theme park funhouse tunnel scene where he's still in the shaft.
Yeah.
And he's just sort of like, you know, feeling his way around. And it just like took his time. It was all just very, very so weird. Mm-hmm. And I love the boys for just doing just ape shit stuff like that. Now, I'm saying this, so Tara has seen the whole season. I don't think anybody else has watched anything beyond what the public can watch. But I think chronologically, just speaking to this, we're due for the, what's it called? It's like...
Herogasm?
Herogasm story.
That's been reported, so I think that's okay to say it's coming up.
Okay, so the Herogasm story is probably nigh in series three, and it is basically the superhero let-off steam getaway of
orgy.
Bohemian, you know, hedonistic anything-goes-isms.
Yeah.
And this felt like just a taste of what could be coming later on in the season.
As it were. Yeah, that episode is real wild. So get hype for it, because shit goes down. That's all I can say, and all I will say, it was crazy. But especially since one of the things that people call Marvel out for is that because they are, you know, PG-13 max, other than Deadpool, like, they're so unhorny despite how hot everyone is. Like, the boys really feels like it's correcting for that in a big way, past, you know, horny to depraved and weird, which is great.
I still want the Deep to put coke on his gills. I'm waiting for that.
Well,
that's, I got a little personal boys bingo card, then there's no check mark there yet.
Huh. Season four.
Here's hoping.
It is time to go around the dial talking about something we've been watching on TV recently, not necessarily recent TV. Tara, you're first. What do you got?
It's not recent TV. The Real World Homecoming is the Paramount Plus series that reunites real world roommates of yesteryear. It came back in April with a new season. It was not the San Francisco season, I assume, because everyone in it refuses to be in the room with everyone else in that season. They all hate each other now, I would imagine. That one may never happen, but they instead jumped to season 9 of The Real World and reunited the cast from New Orleans, which aired in the year 2000. I was going to get into Homecoming, then I couldn't remember if I'd ever watched the original New Orleans series because it did not air in Canada at the time where I was living. So I watched all 23 episodes of The Real World New Orleans. And I think there are a few things people still remember about this season, like the way Melissa says, pick to live in a mansion in the credits, which I've now heard 23 times. Melissa's stories about her dad, Shorty, Danny dating Paul, who was still active in the military, so the show put him on camera but blurred him out Mm-hmm. Wild now. David acting like "Come on, be my baby tonight" is his original composition and not just his take on "Luck Be a Lady." Matt being a super Catholic virgin, and Julie the Mormon having a huge crush on Matt and just being kind of horny in general and also ignorant about all the things you would expect a 20-year-old Brigham Young student to be ignorant about. And the other two roommates are Jamie and Kelly. Even though I just finished watching their whole season 4 days ago, I can't think of anything noteworthy either of them did in that time. Kelly seems to have been gone a lot because she met a guy named Peter. But even though she decided to stay in New Orleans after filming was over, we know it didn't work out for Kelly and Peter because she's married to Scott Wolf now. But it's an okay season. I think what works is completely because of the big personalities of Melissa and Julie. And to be clear, that is not me putting them on the same level. Melissa is obviously a cool person who is fun to watch. And Julie is annoying in a way that makes good TV. But it's also clear the producers know to go to them for particular kinds of commentary on the action in the show. And the one storyline where I felt there was probably the most manipulation was in the portrayal of David. Because if we take the edit as gospel, which we, of course, should not, he is a conceited asshole who has no interest in being civil to the other roommates, never mind getting to know them. And only when the rest of them call a house meeting in literally the season's penultimate episode to confront him about how he acts does he say he's been trying to earn money during his time in the city because his mother isn't well and he supports her. So that might have been useful for the audience to have known earlier. But it also points out how differently MTV reality show subjects are produced now compared to then. Like on Teen Mom, for instance, we see the participants like talking to their producers who are also on camera. And we see how the producers guide them into certain conversations and encourage them to frame their own stories in particular ways to the star's advantage as much as possible. Whereas here, no one was apparently helping David to present himself in the most sympathetic way. And also, even after 8 seasons of the franchise, David still did not have a good understanding of how to position himself for the cameras. So I'm definitely interested in seeing what he has to say now about his edit then. Apparently he goes by Tokyo now. Also, based on what has filtered back to me from Twitter, it sounds like Julie is on one in Homecoming, like in crazy, crazy ways. And given she was already not my fave when I could at least chalk up the stupid things she said to her having been extremely sheltered, now she has no excuse. I will report back after I've watched this season of Homecoming, which I'm very excited for now. And if you haven't watched New Orleans since it was on, watch it. It's on Paramount Plus. It was a pretty good season. Julie, crazy.
So, super Catholic virgin. Is that character going to be at Herogasm?
God, no. For my plug, Dave and I and our friend Pam do another podcast called Listen to Sassy, where we read every issue of Sassy magazine. And that podcast, which you can find at listentosassy.com, that podcast has a Patreon. You can find it at listentosassy.com/club. We are currently... We're deciding what to watch for our monthly Zoom watch along. And the options include a TV movie about crack with Ed Asner, a TV movie with Matthew Perry and Christina Applegate and Alyssa Milano and Brian Bloom all going to the prom, and the 1989 Miss Teen USA pageant, which the version on YouTube is the entire broadcast, including all the ads. So if you want to participate in both the voting for those options and the actual watching of same, go to the Listen to Sassy Club. It's super fun, and you get a ton of perks, including full scans of every issue of the magazine, which is crucial because you can't find those online.
And once again, I'm just putting the word out there for all our cultural historians. Please, 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 even if you don't think that the commercials are worth your digital hard drive space now.
Yes.
People 30 years from now sure going to want to watch them. So make sure you keep those mm-hmm. in.
Yes, 100%. So again, listen to sassy.com/club.
All right, Will, what do you got for us?
Okay, I recently watched The Expanse, the sci-fi show that was on the Sci-Fi Network and then Amazon Prime. This is also not new, obviously, but my brother, who is a big sci-fi geek, bigger than me, I say that as a point of shame. I wish I was a bigger sci-fi geek, urged me to watch it. And so I watched the first 2 seasons, and it's pretty fun. This was a show that I kind of heard whispers about from certain people, but it never like took over my own personal zeitgeisty circle. So I didn't really know a lot about it. I guess it's some books that got made into a TV show. And it's one of these sci-fi things where the stories are so complicated, I couldn't even begin to recap it. And the fun is just kind of the rules of the world that get set up. It's like imagining this sort of like system that exists in the universe. And the primary things that struck me are, it's in the future, space, people are fighting. And there's like three basic civilizations. There's Earth Luna, which is Earth and its moon. Mars, which is a warlike, sort of aggressive, don't mess with us or we'll mess with you, upstart civilization. And then the Belters, who live on the asteroid belt, who are the scum of the earth, you know, scum and villainy kind of.
The guys that inhabit the Fiesta deck. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, space Irish.
Right, yeah, exactly. You got it. Yeah, right. And kind of just seeing the characteristics of those civilizations and jumping back and forth between them. As Earth is like the fallen, formerly great British Empire type. Mars is military and aggressive, and the Belters are scumbags. And the inciting incident is the emergence of a thing called the proto-molecule, which spreads like a virus and turns you into weird Borg zombies, ooh, right? So those pieces being in play, and then like a whole untrackable cast of characters interact with this, like, you know, misunderstood military geniuses from Mars, noble, naive, disillusioned people from Earth, ragtag detectives who see through all the BS from the belt, try to figure out what this zombie virus is doing to the universe. And you know what? I got sucked in hard for a season and a half, and then I kind of lost momentum, and then I let myself lose momentum, and I'm going to leave it at two seasons, but I enjoyed it for two. I think there's five, maybe mm-hmm. six.
Wow.
But I enjoyed the two. And so if you are a sci-fi nerd who sort of likes imagining what the rules of a fictional simplified universe are, I recommend it. That's my take.
I recommend bailing on a show when it loses your interest and not being a completist just for the sake of it.
That's really saved me in the era of peak TV. Just like I watched the first season of Last Man on Earth and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Watched one episode of the second season and I just left it with no hard feelings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From there. Yeah. Succession, I watched the first two seasons and adored it. Watched a couple episodes of season three and I'm like, yeah, you know what? I get it. God be with you on your travel, Succession. I'm done with you.
Yeah, fair.
I don't know. But so I'm giving a lukewarm plus review to The Expanse.
All right.
And my plug is I do a million podcasts. I have a problem, but I'm doing a new one called You Can't Handle the Sleuths. And it's an improvised kind of like all the killers, you know, one of the killers is the people in this room scene. It's part of a sort of subscription model network called CBB World, which is an offshoot of the Comedy Bang Bang podcast by Scott Aukerman. And that's got a huge fan base. And so Scott has kind of created a little subscription model kingdom where he can sort of allow maybe ill-advised shows to happen. And I am one of those ill-advised shows. Yeah, it's called You Can't Handle the Sleuths. And I've had really fun guests that are from the LA comedy world that I've kind of wrangled to be on it. It's totally improvised. I've seen stuff online, fans who have been kind enough to listen to it sort of say like, you know, this mystery didn't actually add up. They didn't really solve it all. It's like, oh yeah, it is almost an insane amount of dream logic that allows us to pretend that the mystery is solved. But, yeah. I think the ride is fun. So if you've been thinking about doing the CBB World thing, come on in and listen to You Can't Handle the Sleuths. That's my plug.
Yeah, if you say there's a lot of improv and at the end of it the mystery didn't make sense, I feel like that is sort of like the best endorsement actually getting what you want out of a podcast like that.
We basically start the episode and then I have a stopwatch, and when the stopwatch hits 50 minutes, I go, I know who the killer is, and I just pick somebody and then hope that the group helps me to, and I got picked as the killer in one episode, which was a dismay to me.
Oh.
Everybody was like, it was you. And I was like, I guess I have to just confess to a murder, even though I am the, you know, I am the Hercule, how do you say his name? Poirot.
Yes.
Yeah, of love this it. Episode. But
fantastic.
I was the killer in one episode.
Excellent. All right. You can't handle the sleuths.
Sleuths.
There's more than one. Sleuths. Check that out. It'll be in our show notes. Sarah D. Bunting.
This news is a little old now, but the latest season of Top Chef Houston, crowned its winner last week.
I was pleased with the result, but didn't necessarily feel the need to talk about it at the time, except that I had like no fewer than 3 separate conversations about the show and how good it has gotten again in the intervening time. So I decided to mention that. I think I've said before, I almost stopped watching 4 or 5 seasons ago because it just seemed like the judges were weighted down by their own self-importance. Nobody was having any fun. And then at some point, and this was like pre-pandemic, Padma like got over herself and started embracing the joy of her job, which is just like eating food / sometimes making fun of disgusting food, but that doesn't happen that often. And she started leaning into her reputation as this like stoner Amazon of culinary competition, which who among us would not? I don't know what happened. I do know that everybody on the production was so happy when they got to come back last season, amidst COVID, that it was really quite moving. And I think it was a process that was underway already in terms of them actually enjoying what they do and using it for good. And that became grateful text starting last year, for lack of a better term. Unfortunately, last season's winner needs to be formally erased and Shota installed as the real winner because I love that guy and Gabe sucks. And my one quibble with this season was how come they ended up in Arizona for the last 3 weeks of a season called Top Chef Houston?
That is weird.
Not the episodes weren't good. I just felt like there was something we weren't being told. Like, we all live in the world and we understand where hot spots are. Just tell us there was some kind of outbreak and you had to go to Tucson. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But the production generally has really committed to getting great chefs, to celebrating the diversity in cooking and also of the cities that they're in each time, and using it to educate, but without being prim and self-regarding about it like they used to be. And everyone's just psyched to be together and make food. The drama comes from the craft, not the craft's people, a la baking show. And, you know, it's about time. Long-running franchises don't always find a way to like do this and get back to the joy without seeming desperate, Survivor. And Top Chef has done it. So congrats to the show and to Buddha, Brooklyn's Own, for winning the last season.
Hey.
For my plug, I interviewed author Sarah Weinman last week about her book, Scoundrel, and lots of other true crime stuff, including Truman Capote basically kicking himself out of the Dean Corll trial 50 years ago. Part one is on my True Crime Bookshops blog. That's at exhibitbbooks.com. Part 2 will be coming later this week, and we will link that in the show notes.
All right, everybody, coming up on the next Extra, Extra Hot Grade, the podcast that puts an extra, extra, an extra hot grade. It is, okay, I'll buy it. Just turn it off. A second round of commercial earworms for your delight that is available to all supporters at any level. Please visit patreon.com/extrahotgrate to join today and support this podcast. And then right here on the next EHG Prime, it is Ms. Marvel. Hey, look, it's Marvel's back. There's probably going to be so many exploding heads in this one. They're really going to surprise us. We welcome back Kate Sanchez for that one. Don't miss it next week. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Candidate. Presenting this week is Skylar. Take it away, Skylar.
Hello, my name is Skylar, and I'm submitting Twin Peaks The Return Part 8 for the Extra Hot Great Canon. First, to give a brief overview, Twin Peaks The Return is one of those wild projects that only makes sense in the era of peak TV. After David Lynch and Mark Frost's initial Twin Peaks run ended on ABC with a second season neither planned on, an executive demanded resolution to Laura Palmer's murder, and Lynch's departure from the property almost entirely, Lynch directed the prequel film Fire Walk With Me and moved on to other projects. The Log Lady and Double R Darner seemed destined to languish. Or they did, until Showtime, Lynch, and Frost made the math make sense to revive the cult series. It didn't hurt that the series had found an enthusiastic second life on Netflix. 2 episodes of the original run have already been successfully submitted to the canon. Season 1's Zen, or The Skill to Catch a Killer, which introduced the backwards-talking man from another place, and the Season 2 finale, Beyond Life and Death, which dove deeper into the darkness between Twin Peaks' surface and left Dale Cooper, the famously chipper FBI agent, in limbo while his doppelganger went back into the real world world, all with the vague promise that we'd see him again in 25 years. Cue The Return, the third season of the series, whose 18 episodes aired just about 25 years later. Before they did, the show was met with all sorts of wild speculation, fueled by casting announcements that included much of the original series as regulars, plus seemingly everyone with an agent, the return of Angelo Badalamenti, whose score was so key to that first run, and a single, hundreds of pages long script, which Lynch and Frost broke into pieces to fit Showtime's hour-long episode blocks. What resulted for the people who watched it was generally received rapturously, and probably the most rapture met part 8. Before diving in, let me just be clear. I love this episode, but as is often the case with Twin Peaks, I am not totally certain what happens in this episode. Per Mark Frost, he and Lynch set out to craft an origin story for Twin Peaks' dark core. While part 8 is that, it's that wrapped up in a bizarre, traditionally David Lynch-style package. Part 8 opens with Cooper's doppelganger, played again by Kyle MacLachlan, who rocks a glorious mane of scuzzy, shoulder-length hair, and zero of the real Dale Cooper's sunny charms, confronting a criminal pal of his named Ray. Ray ultimately shoots Cooper, and what follows is, like much of the episode, highly visual. A gaggle of soot-covered, disheveled woodsmen blink into frame and run their hands over Cooper, smearing him with his own blood, as Ray watches in horror. In the process, the woodsmen release a black orb from Cooper's abdomen, which bears the face of Bob, the literal embodiment of evil who's been piloting Cooper's doppelganger for the past 25 years. Ray takes off and makes a call.
Philip, it's Ray. I think he's dead. But he's found some kind of help, so I'm not 100%. And I saw something in Cooper. It may be the key to what this is all about. And I told him where I'm going, so if he comes after me, I'll get him there.
After that, we cut to the roadhouse, where we get this musical act intro.
Ladies and gentlemen, the roadhouse is proud to welcome the Nine Inch Nails.
After the Nine Inch Nails' performance, we cut back to Cooper in the field, not dead after all. Then we move into the section of the episode that, for me, pushes it thoroughly into canon-worthy territory. All color drops out, and a title card announces that we're in White Sands, New Mexico, on July 16th, 1945, at 5:29:45 a.m., at the very first atomic bomb test. There's a countdown, and the explosion, and immediately, nothing is the same. The camera pushes into the mushroom cloud, the score shrills, and the screen is entirely given over to 5 minutes of flames, radiation static, and dust, all before dissolving onto an isolated gas station. Now, this is quite the gas station. Smoke starts in, as do a number of woodsmen. They blink in and out of place, and we move on to a vague gray zone where a semi-featureless body vomits, which, apologies, Sarah, a sort of knobby strand of rocks, goo, and, most importantly, the Bob orb that's going to end up in doppelganger Cooper's tummy in a few decades. Let me underline. Well, yes, television has become an incredibly ambitious and inventive place in the decades since the initial Twin Peaks run. Lynch and Frost were instrumental in pushing it along that inventive path, and they did so with swings like this. There's a sure-footedness in the amount of real estate Lynch and Frost devote to these abstractions, just as there is in their clear evocation of 2001, another story of the harm humanity does to itself under the guise of technological steps into a brave new future. Of course, part 8 is not done. After even more Stargate-style nuclear pyrotechnics, it moves on to a white, modernist building atop the craggiest little island you ever did see. Inside, a woman credited as Senorita Dido sits and listens to a phonograph next to a sizable black vessel. An alarm begins to sound above the vessel, which another character credited as the fireman enters to deal with. Afterwards, he heads to a movie theater to witness the atomic horror for himself. Once he spots Bob, he begins to levitate, and Senorita Dido enters, catching him mid-corpse float. He releases a golden, glowing orb, which drifts down into Senorita Dido's hands. As she stares into it, Laura Palmer's smiling face emerges inside, a bright, earnest counter to Bob's smirking darkness. The Laura orb ascends into the screen and onto Earth. Back in New Mexico, we jump to 1956. In the desert sands, one of the rocks from the featureless body's vomit stream, which, again, sorry, Sarah, hatches. What emerges appears to be part fly, part frog, and we watch as the grubby thing crawls away. We move on to a pair of teenagers on a date, then return to the desert where it's raining woodsmen who emerge onto a road and stop a couple in a car. They approach and ask this fun question.
Got a light? Got a light? Got a light? Ooh.
Back with the teens, they kiss and separate. Back with the woodsman, the smoker makes his way to a radio station where things get bleak. He crushes a receptionist's skull and attacks the DJ before picking up the microphone to repeat this.
This is the water. And this is the well. Drink full and ascend. The horse is the white of the eyes and dark within.
As the woodsman sounds off, everyone in the town who hears this broadcast passes out. We cut back to the frog moth, now outside the girl's house. She's passed out, and the frog moth crawls its whole ratty body into her mouth. The episode closes with the woodsman killing the DJ and making his way back into the darkness to the sound of a neighing horse. So, what about part 8 makes it a standout exactly? Well, as a sort of explainer for the dark mechanics behind the decidedly strange world of Twin Peaks, it's probably about as satisfying an explainer as one could hope for. Bob apparently was unleashed by the nuclear age, and a whole bunch of additional evil bile spilled into the world alongside. It's Lynch and Frost reclaiming Laura Palmer as more of an abstract and virtuous force opposing Bob than they got a chance to make her back in the 90s, when her death had to be solved and her complicated messiness reduced to satisfy network demands. And it's them doing so on terms that are thoroughly theirs, and thoroughly visually ambitious in a way that was both a clear throwback and something wholly theirs when the episode aired. Further, like the season as a whole, Part 8 strikes me as the sort of ideal outcome for a creative team warming over their beloved old property decades after its initial run. Arrested Development Season 4 this isn't. And finally, I believe it should be in the canon because it strikes me as reaching the particular strange heights that marked both Zen and beyond. So please, Extra Hot Great. It's a damn fine episode of Twin Peaks, The Return.
Thank you, Skylar. Will, you chose this from among our listener submissions. Please start us off.
Okay. I love this pick. I think it's a good pick, and I'm advocating for it. I'm a big fan of the first season and a half of Twin Peaks, which like a lot of people are. That's like a common distinction. Then it falls off, and there's a great final episode in the second season, which I also really enjoyed. So when this season was announced, the Showtime season, I was super excited. And I mostly did not like it. I mostly felt that it was like Lynch's bad tendencies out of balance from his good ones. It was just like not, the story was just too soft. Kyle MacLachlan was in a coma for 7 episodes. Like that is, or not, he was catatonic. Just, you know, and I was just like, you're taking the most charismatic character out who kind of like solved a lot of your weird tendencies just with his like joyful, compelling presence. Mm-hmm. So bad decisions like that outweighed the many short good things, which were just these insane dreamy nightmare sequences that would happen now and then, and I really enjoyed, but there weren't enough of it until this episode. And then this episode happened and I was like, okay, this I love. Like it was scary and strange. I was rapt the whole time. I couldn't take my eyes off it. Yeah, it's true. It doesn't make sense. But it's like, it makes enough sense in the way that like a good poem makes sense. Like it's essentially the story of the birth of good and the birth of evil and their introduction into society. Yeah, that were, and it's sort of setting up an eventual war between them.
Back in 1945 when good and evil just started.
That's right. Yeah. But they say like the nuclear explosion like unlocked it. Like it's, That's just that works enough for me to follow along. And if you've been watching all of Twin Peaks up until that point, and Bob has been there as this malevolent force, and Laura Palmer is this sort of, you know, unfairly murdered victim of his evil, I don't know. It checked out for me. And like just that little clip that was played where the soot covered woodsman say "Got a light," and there's the kind of strange mosquito rubbing on a screen door buzz. Mm-hmm. And the gurgle in his throat, like it was terrifying when I watched it. And David Lynch is a genius of mood and a genius of making you think, don't worry, this will make sense in a second, even though he never has. But it always feels like the answer is just around the corner. I mean, if you've ever wanted to make films or even just daydreamed about it, he is a weird genius of some kind. And he does it usually in very lo-fi ways. I mean, David Lynch makes things scary with almost no money. It's like just double exposure and sound design. He's the sound designer on his films. Like there's been a history of directors who do the music like John Carpenter, but David Lynch is the only one where he is the sound designer and he gets so much mileage out of it. I find it fascinating. So this episode was all I really wanted from season three. The rest of it, I kind of found a waste. But this justified the existence of the entire season and is the most Lynchy thing in all three seasons. So I think it's a good pick. And I think about that weird little poem the woodsman said, you know, this is the water, this is the well, drink full and descend. I mean, it's, I don't know what it means, but it haunts me. I love it. So I argue for it.
This is the water, and this is the well. Drink full, and descend. The horse is the white of the ease, and dark within.
That's the battle joy from Star Wars doing that. You want to hear J. Jonah Jameson doing it? Sure you do.
I do. I really do.
This is the water, and this is the well. Drink full, and descend. The horse is the white of the eyes, and dark within.
What's that? You want to hear Kermit do it? Sure, I got that for you, too.
This is the water, and this is the well. Drink full, and descend. Rivers is the white of the eyes, and dark within.
Okay, we'll follow that, Sarah.
Sure. So I think that the phrase, the way a good poem makes sense, is particularly apt here because just, you know, 90% of the time, David Lynch is like someone I acknowledge as a genius and for whom I am glad in the culture, even though his shit is not for me. I think the proportions of weird to sort of verifiable are out of whack. That's just me, but I think it's like too disorienting sometimes. Like Wild at Heart was like better proportions. Blue Velvet was worse proportions, but it's like, I'm glad David Lynch is and does what he does and that people like it. And I don't think they're wrong to like it or even worship it. But this episode felt to me like the video from The Ring, but five times as long. And it's just like, you know, that was creepy because the proportions were a little bit better. Like there were things that you could recognize and things that did make sense that made the disorienting and sort of nonsensical or opaque things more powerful. I just, for me, these proportions are like, it's more confusing than affecting. With all that said, like, this was beautiful to look at. The sound design was very creepy. I just kind of felt like I so often feel with David Lynch stuff. And your other point about sort of Dale Cooper being sidelined by Catatonia for most of this season, like this is part of what I'm trying to say. Like in original Twin Peaks, like I haven't watched all of those episodes, but there is a humanity and a tethering that character and Kyle MacLachlan does that throws everything else into better and more relatable contrast that was not present here. Like everything here was just like weird visual haikus. And I mean, then barfing also, like that wasn't great. I'm not going to lie. But it's, you know, it's not fatal. And I just don't know what I'm going to do in terms of putting it in the canon because, you know, Lynch, like, is this a worthwhile titan of the genre? Sure. Do I want to treat with it usually? No. So I don't know what to do canon wise, and I'm interested to hear what everyone else has to say. Who's next?
Star. I'll go next. I mean, the story of Twin Peaks, the original series on ABC, was like, you know, David Lynch got noted to death. There was ABC, like, you know, took over his vision, and that's why it's, you know, it's whatever, and people don't, true fans of David Lynch don't always, like, acknowledge that it's his work because the perception is that it was watered down by the network, which was one of the three networks that existed at the time. Where the, you know, you could just imagine a network executive who's used to reading scripts for, like, 30-something, getting this and being like, what the fuck? And, you know, turning it into something that is more what the original two seasons is, which is a David Lynch take on a primetime soap opera, which is, you know, that's a different kind of thing. clearly than what this is. And I agree with you, Sarah. Like, I'm very up and down with the rest of his film work. And in terms of this, like, I'm glad he and Mark Frost got to make exactly the show they wanted to make.
Yeah.
It's not for me either. But right. I'm glad that, you know, for the people it is for, that they got to watch it, because people do not feel moderately about this.
Like, no,
people
they
who
don't.
love it. And I'm thrilled for them. I am not among them. And, you know, we love a big swing with a canon presentation, but my feeling at the end of this was like two things. First, in terms of it as an episode of television, it made me yearn for what I now see as only moderate up its own assness that we got from Devs, the Hulu show from a couple of years ago. Which, like, now, like, in retrospect, it's like, that's basically as straight ahead as an episode of Murder, She Wrote in my memory compared to this episode.
Yeah. Well,
but my other feeling about it is, like, I almost don't even want to call it TV. I know it aired on Showtime. People watched it on their televisions. But I feel like this is something where, like, I would go to an art gallery and this would be, like, playing all around me in the middle of a white room. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, I mean, a poem, Will's analogy of it as a poem is very good. But I also think it could work as, like, a video art installation because, you know, Skylar, bless his heart, trying to take us through the plot, like, the what? When you get to the part where it's like, we cut back to the frog moth, it's like, okay, like, I respect it. Mm-hmm. I respect the episode. I respect the presentation. It was a very weird day. And I'll just say, we watched this on the same day we watched an episode of Buck Rogers, like a couple hours after this. And it was like, TV contains multitudes. Like,
it
I get
really
it.
It really does.
But it was a wild day where we experienced both of those things. Like,
wow.
Not quite back to back, but, you know, so.
And only one of them had Jerry Orbach as a mind-controlling rock and roller.
And you're going to hear
That's
about
what
that
was
in
missing,
a few weeks.
Really.
But yeah, I
Orbach.
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes, like, after not the Nine Inch Nails playing a full song at the Roadhouse, I think I just gave up. Like, it was a very strange experience, particularly out of context. But, like, we did try to watch the show, or I did at least. And I think, like, three quarters of the way through the first episode of The Return, I was like, I hate this. Like, I can't watch it. Yeah. And, you know, this is a very singular experience. And it's, as Sarah said, it's really hard to evaluate for that reason, because it doesn't feel like TV to me in any recognizable way. Dave.
I hated this. I always feel bad just coming out saying I hate something that somebody's presenting for the canon, especially when it's in one of you guys. So maybe I'll just pretend like Sarah submitted this for a little bit. Sarah, I can't believe you thought I would like this.
Yes, that's me, the barf containing submitter.
That was
I'm
so
sorry. Sorry.
Okay, look, I came into Twin Peaks, the original, late in life. Like, I didn't watch it until probably whenever. When was it? Like 5, 6 years ago?
It was in the
ago?
2010s
yeah.
That you watched it.
And I really enjoyed it. And I totally agree with Will's assessment of season one solid, season two starts and ends well.
Duchovny.
Weird shit in between I didn't care for. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't weird shit like this weird shit. Like, the original Twin Peaks was such a perfect, weird alchemy of, like, soap and mirth and creepiness. And it all just mixed together in the right amounts. And after watching this episode, I say yay for those ABC people actually stuck their thumb in his pie and said, no, let's bake this again, because honestly, this series, and this is like the second episode of this to watch, because I was there when we bailed on the pilot, because I also hated this, because it didn't seem like the same show at all. And I think if you're in for the Lynchianness of it all, and that is like the ingredient, you know, those moments where Lynch peered through in the original series and you wanted more of that, boy, you get it here. But I just do not enjoy things where people say it's brilliant, yet also can't tell me anything about it. That is a red flag for me. It's like, yeah, yes, quite, yes. And what it's about? I don't know, Nuke Made Bob, I guess. Like, okay, great. Lynch, like, you just made, like, a weirder version of Godzilla. Like, congratulations. Like, but this whole thing, just on the base level of, okay, this is the origin of the dark core of Twin Peaks. Like, first of all, I don't need it. But the whole thing just has, like, a whiff of midichlorians to me. Like, it's a story I didn't need to know. It's a story that I feel doesn't add to what we've seen in the original. Patton Oswalt saying, I don't need to know where the things I love came from sometimes. I just want to watch the things I love. And the things I love was Twin Peaks original, not Twin Peaks The Return. Because Twin Peaks The Return tonally feels like a different show. Like, I feel like they could have taken the themes of this and made something that is easier to digest because it isn't hooked into this iconic piece of television from yesteryear. Mm-hmm. That is my hang up with this. Besides the fact that it really just seemed like poetic nonsense to actually take Will saying. And like, the episode is gorgeous and sound is amazing. Like, technically it is great, but I just can't get past everything else. Like, blind taste test. You take the scene with, like, the explosion zooming in. Like, is that a David Lynch movie or is this, like, a Grimes video? Like, it would be hard to choose blind taste test.
Yeah.
I'm a little worked up because how much I hated this. So I enjoyed how much I hated it. I will say, this is the water. This is the well. I was saying that to my dogs every time I gave them water for like a good week after. This is the well. And then I would like forget the rest of it. Drink up, dogs. Yummy. But I always
drink up, dogs. Yummy. And descend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So absolutely a no vote for me. But what a journey. What?
Yeah.
I will say I'm glad I saw it insofar that I was so perplexed and upset with it that I'm glad I saw it on that level. Like, it gave me something to be genuinely angry about, which hasn't happened in a little while on television. Like, angry, like, what? How dare they do this to me? So that's where I'm at. All right, let's put this to the vote.
Brief rebuttal.
Yeah.
Hate is the opposite of love.
Uh-huh.
And you loved it. You don't know it yet, but you love this episode. You're going to wake up one day and put it on, and you're going to watch it again and just
and you're going to thank
gonna
me
out of you
for submitting the frog moth.
Wake up
moth.
One day after the thing crawled into my mouth. Mm-hmm.
The frog moth is a vehicle of good. It's delivering the good orb into Laura Palmer's mother. So there you go.
Ew. Fantastic.
The frog moth is good.
Get out.
All right, let's put this to a vote. Will Hines.
Yes.
What say you?
I say yes, big time.
Tara Ariano.
I say first, rules help control the fun, true in games and true in television. So I really appreciate Skylar exposing us to, exposing all of us to this, but it's a no vote for me.
And Sarah?
I'd like to say first, thank you to Will for creating the delivering the good orb euphemism, which I'm now going to be using. In my life, I'll deliver a good one, as you may have read in the men's room. Second of all, thank you, Skylar, for this presentation. It was really thought-provoking, and it's fun now and then to, in a canon presentation, sort of try to bend our minds around all the different things that TV can be. Mm-hmm. But this TV cannot be in the canon, because I gotta say no. A whole Nine Inch Nails song? The whole song. Come on, man.
We didn't even talk about how long we saw them drive in a car. Like, just see the road in headlights for a long, long time.
Yeah, terrified me. Should have been longer. I can't believe they cut that so short.
All right. I'm going to vote no, too. I'm not saying that.
Oh, what a surprise. Really? What?
Oh, no. Is a panacea that will solve all of television's woes. But I really think in this case, it kind of was part of what made Twin Peaks, Twin Peaks. So I'm just going to say, in this one case, let's give it up for the guys at ABC. Yeah! But for this one, that means, unfortunately, Twin Peaks, The Return, which is a different title, but it is still season 3, episode 8. It is called Part 8. You are hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
This is the winner, and this is the well.
See?
Drink up.
It
and
got
descend.
Into you. It got into you.
Yeah. Drink up on Fergal. That is our winner. They have booked John Hamm and Jennifer Jason Leigh for season 5. I have no idea how that shit's going to go, but I can't wait to find out. Well done.
Yeah. And loser?
Loser is Showtime's not for making Twin Peaks. They are making a series adaptation of American Gigolo, and Paul Schrader, who directed the original movie, called the series a terrible idea. And if he thinks that's going to stop me watching a TV show where John Bernthal fucks, he is wrong.
Huh. Speaking about being wrong, do you know what time it is?
Game time.
Is it game time?
The sound effects are so good on this show. I think you should appreciate David Lynch's sound design a little bit more.
I gave him props. It was a feast for the ears.
Yeah, before you ripped it apart for 20 minutes about how angry it made you.
But I think you're right. I'm coming around to loving how much I was angry at it, though.
Sometimes we get submissions where we're like, it was fine. I mean, is why we like a big swing, because it gives us
emotion's a slingshot. The hate is just pulling the elastic one way. It'll swing back the other way, and you'll wake up loving
it. The one thing I didn't mention was that when he vomits up Bob is like in a bubble, like he's from like a video from 1982 just floating around,
or like a novelty marble with the New Kids in it. Totally.
The graphics of Bob's head just cut out and like pasted, seriously, like the oldest school Photoshop.
Yeah,
was jarring to
yeah him. It was Kai Power Tools good. In bubble or something like that. Yeah. Oh, God.
David Lynch can make a horror movie with... Give David Lynch $100. He'll make the scariest scene ever.
Oh, I thought you meant just give him $100 for banging on him.
Just give him $100. Yeah, also just give him $100.
That's fair. All right, guys. This is still game time. This is the 8th game time of the season. The scores are... Tara's got 4. Sarah has 2 points. Value guests have 1. Today, we're playing All Good Things from John, who earns himself an extra credit topic of his choosing. This is how it works. You're going to guess the name of the show based on the fates or actions of characters in the last episode.
Okay.
Five points for answering after the actions that I'll read you of a supporting character.
Five?
Uh-huh. Five.
Okay.
3 points for answering after the actions of a main character. And then, if you still don't know it, you can answer at the 1 point level after I give you the names of those characters.
Okay.
You only get 1 guess, so you got to figure out when you want to put that out there.
Fine.
Okay.
Good intel.
I think we're going to skip Steel Meals today because they're all just going to be at the point level.
Right.
And let's just throw it to Pinky to see who's going to go first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. We'll go Sarah, Will, Tara. Are we ready to play All Good Things?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. So,
I turned British.
Yeah, what's happening? I love it. Sarah D. Bunting. Again, I'm going to read you the action, the fate of a supporting character first. You can do the answer or ask for the next hint.
Okay.
Resigns as governor. Supporting character. Resigned as governor in the finale of what show?
Oh,
answer or ask for the main character.
Oh, resigned as governor. I mean, it's
so tempting.
Can't be, but I have to, right?
You have to. You have to.
This is like the Bensoner's dilemma. Fine, Benson.
Main character action gets slapped in the face by a coworker. That is Peter and Alicia from the wife.
Oh, right.
All right.
Okay. Oh, wow.
All right, Will. Nice. Your supporting character action is learns she has lung cancer. Whee! So a supporting character tempting. In the finale of this show learns she has lung cancer.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the next level. Let's go to the main character.
The main character writes a catchy jingle.
Is this Mad Men?
It is Mad Men, yes.
Well done.
All right.
Is Betty and Dawn.
Still laughing at the Bensoners dilemma.
I was thinking Benson too. Every time I hear governor, I think
right.
Benson.
Yeah.
In any context.
That's why he always writes in Benson when he goes to vote.
The Benson orb.
Yep.
Tara.
Yep.
Supporting character goes to prison.
Oh, well, that could be anything. I'll take the next one.
Main character wins a Tony Award.
Smash?
Smash is correct. Yes.
Wow.
Jimmy and Ivy there.
Hey.
Nice.
Back to Sarah.
Yeah.
Supporting character discovers she is pregnant with her fourth child.
With her fourth child. Next hint, please.
Main character attends college at Harvard. You want to give us a reading on Harvard, Will?
Harvard.
Thank you.
Harvard.
Still British.
You can guess or guess the character names. Your characters are, and this is a good hint, Lois and Malcolm.
Wow.
Is it? Lois?
And Lois is your supporting character. Malcolm is your main character. Malcolm is your main character.
Is he in the middle?
Yes.
Great.
Okay. Will, your supporting character is elected mayor.
Is this The Wire? I don't know.
The main character becomes a federal government employee. That's Jerry and Ron from Parks and Recreation.
Sure.
Ah, so close.
Also would have been Benson. Again.
Any government official.
Yep.
Tara.
Yep.
Supporting character goes to acting school in London.
Well, I know what you want me to say, but I'm not going to. I'll take the next hint.
Main character becomes headmistress at her high school alma mater.
Oh, God. This is wrong, but Gilmore Girls?
That is, what if I told you, Tootie and Blair?
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's the facts of life. Yeah. You take the good, take the bad. Blah, 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 blah. Mm.
Take the good orb, you take the bad orb.
Yep.
Then you have.
This is the good.
The frog moth.
And this is the bad. You take them all, and there you have.
The light.
The return.
See, it's still in you. It's going to be in you forever.
It is.
Supporting character for Sarah D. Bunton in the finale becomes interested in Dungeons and Dragons.
Next hint.
I got
it. The main character decides to spend the summer following the Grateful Dead.
Next hint.
Daniel is your supporting character. Lindsay is your main character.
Oh, Freaks and Geeks.
Freaks and Geeks. Good for one. To Will.
Hi.
Hello. Cheerio. Supporting character contemplates law school.
Oof, I don't know. Let's go to the main character.
Main character finally gets her son to nurse.
I mean, I think this is also the plot to the movie Moonstruck, but I don't know what TV show this is. Oh, no, there's a different Cher movie. Okay, Ida.
Want the characters?
Yeah, characters.
Marnie and Hannah. Hannah.
Gosh, I don't know. I don't know, I'm afraid.
It's Hannah. Doesn't matter, though.
It's girls.
Girls.
Oh,
right.
Ah.
Tara.
Yep.
Your supporting character finds out she is getting a baby.
Next hint.
Main character finds out her boyfriend's first name.
I'll take the final hint.
Your characters, supporting Charlotte, main Carrie.
Oh. Sex and the City.
Sex and the City.
Mm.
1 point. Sarah D. Bunting, your supporting character dies of illness.
Oh, illness. Yeah. Heard of it?
Oh, okay.
We all remember we were when we saw that finale.
When we saw die of illness. Next hint.
The main character gets back together with their ex.
Jesus. Oh, Dawson's Creek.
Oh!
It's true, though.
It is.
Yeah, it is true. I'm going to give you a point for that because I feel like, as worded, that could have been Dawson's Creek. We're looking for How I Met Your Mother.
I think she should get 3 points.
Oh, yeah,
for that.
3 points. Yeah, you're at the 3-point level. So I'm going to give you that, 3 points.
If everyone else is all right with that, I will gladly accept.
I'm totally fine. That's a good orb move.
Yeah.
Will. I love the orbs are now the mascot of...
Yeah. The frog moth would approve of that scoring system. That would crawl right into your mouth for that, Dave. That's a real... you deserve a good orb.
And right, then your head will explode.
Your supporting character moves to Dallas to work at a new school.
I'll take the main character.
The main character helps his brother build a house. I should say a main character for a lot of these. It's
sure,
not necessarily.
Sure. I really have no idea. I'm going to take the wildest of guesses. Mm-hmm. Party of Five.
Party of Five is incorrect.
All right.
It was a move within Texas. That is Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights.
Yep.
Supporting character. Mm-hmm. Enters the Peace Corps.
Okay, next.
Main character goes to New York with longtime love interest.
The Wonder Years?
That's what I would have guessed.
That is Boy Meets World.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting. So
yeah.
Your supporting character in the finale joins the Undersea. The Undersea. That is one word, Undersea. And it is capitalized. So I'm going to guess it's some sort of organization or something like that.
But I'm not sure which one. So could I have the main character, please?
The main character hits the road with a traveling symphony, and that is also capitalized. So I'm guessing it is also a group or organization. The Undersea and the Traveling Symphony are things in those clues.
It's also not helpful. Next hint, please.
Your supporting character is Alex. Your main character is Kirsten.
It's interesting to have no idea.
Dead like
just
me?
Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
It's like being in a forest and just hearing crickets around, being like, this is peaceful and lost and will never be found, but just kind of enjoy it.
So it's not Dead Like Me?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not Dead Like Me. It is Station 11. Station 11.
Oh, okay.
All right. Will.
Yeah.
Your supporting character is saved by a bulletproof vest when he's shot on the job. I'm just going to, before you guess, if you're not sure, the main character information is the biggest hint. Like,
okay, let's go to the main character. Let's go.
The main character is hurled into outer space after his space shuttle collides with a satellite. Don't worry, NASA gets him home just in time for him to finally kiss the girl of his dreams.
Oh, okay.
A lot of detail.
Yeah, that's probably a great hint for somebody smarter than me, but I don't know. And so just for fun, I'm going to guess Manimal.
That was Eddie and Steve.
Not Manimal?
As in Steve Urkel from Family Matters.
You don't say.
Yep.
Wow.
Gosh.
Boy Meets World and Family Matters had crazy endings.
And so many orbital jokes to have been made. And no one made them.
All right, this is for Tara. We'll take us into our first score break. It is the half point in the game.
Okay.
Your supporting character goes on a date with Julia Roberts.
Next hint.
Your main character interviews God, finds out she doesn't have breast cancer.
Final hint?
Frank is your supporting character. Murphy is your main character.
Who is?
Murphy.
Murphy.
Yeah. Like a good bar at the dock, that main character's name is Murphy.
Oh, my God. I mean, I assume it's some kind of dream sequence. I don't know. Herman's Head. What if that was right, you guys?
What if that,
that would
was
be amazing.
Right? Murphy Brown.
Oh.
Is the end of that.
Mm. All right. This game is hard, man.
Scores, please.
Fun.
This is a very close, very low-scoring game. Here are, the scores are as follows. Will has 3. I have 4. Sarah is in the lead with 5.
Thanks to Dawson, of all people.
Honestly.
I am in the lead.
All right. So back with Sarah for her question. Your supporting character in the finale invests money in a racehorse without wife's knowledge.
Next hint, please.
Your main character announces retirement for health reasons.
Next hint.
Benny in Leland.
L.A. Law.
L.A. Law. Nice. Good for one. All right.
Ooh,
this
nice.
Is question 17.
This is pretty cool.
It is for Will. Your right. supporting character gets his own sitcom.
Okay. Sounds fun. Still thinking Manimal, but I'm not going to go that way yet. What do we got next?
Your main character invents a see-through dishwasher.
Okay, did Dexter's Lab have a season finale? I don't think so. It's your own sitcom. Sounds like a music video for Van Halen. Could that be considered the music video for Hot for Teacher? Is that a TV series? I don't know, so I'm going to guess Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Nice. I love that guess.
Me too.
That
is incorrect. Do you know it, Tara?
No.
Oh, that is Grizz and Jack Donaghy from 30 Rock.
Oh, of course. See-through dishwasher. Yep.
Right. All right, Tara.
Yep.
Your supporting character is found guilty of 54 murders before disappearing from his prison cell.
Hannibal?
That's what I would have guessed.
Your main character, I know you've already answered, is promoted to supervisor. Your supporting character is Zach, a.k.a. Jesus. Does that help you?
No.
No, that's touched by an angel, apparently.
Okay.
What? Wow. Nice. All right.
All right, Sarah, this is question. Your supporting character wishes to do more violence.
Just like we do.
Yeah.
This could also be Hannibal, or Manimal, but I don't know, and I will lick the second hint.
Your main character lines up to fight a dragon.
Game of Thrones?
What?
Should be.
It should.
Your characters are Illyria and Angel. Can you guess the show name from that? Yes, Angel.
Angle?
Yes, it was Angle. All right, Will, your supporting character pushes her ex-boyfriend into a pool and is fired.
Pushes her ex-boyfriend into a pool and is fired. I'm going to guess Dead Like Me, what Sarah did before.
Incorrect.
Okay.
The main character loses all his money in a poker game, spends the night in a barn, but makes it home for the 4th of July parade. Ringing any bells for anybody? It is a show with a reimagining currently on the air.
Dynasty?
No, that is Winnie and Kevin from the Wonder Years.
That's the Wonder Years.
That's
all right, Tara.
Yeah.
Your supporting character, opens a car dealership in the finale.
Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey, our first 5-pointer, I think.
Nice.
Incredible.
Yes,
incredible.
Downton Abbey. That's Henry.
He is the best at car.
He is the best at car. Sarah D. Bunting, your supporting character makes a grand gesture of love for his ex-wife.
Next hint.
Your main character marries roommate's uncle.
Next hint.
Stan and Dorothy.
The Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls is good for 1 point.
I'm really enjoying this, even though I have no idea about any of them.
All right. It is your turn. I'm going to let you know right now it is not Dead Like Me.
Okay.
Your supporting character. There's a bonus, bonus information.
Still could be Manimal.
That's why I'm picking my hint.
Yeah, sure, sure. Mm-hmm.
Tess, your supporting character, Tess's daughter, to see if she wants to live in Iowa.
Tess's daughter to see if she wants to live in Iowa. Okay. Does sound like a Grizz move, but we already said 30 Rock. All right, I'm going to go for the main character.
Main character moves back to Connecticut from Iowa.
Back to Connecticut from Iowa.
I don't know. There's not a lot of shows that take place in Connecticut, so that's a decent hint. But don't forget, you can get the character names.
I'll guess. Gilmore Girls.
What if you knew the characters were Mona and Tony?
Who is the boss of
those
two?
Who is the boss? Correct. Tara.
Yep.
Your supporting character gets married in a ceremony officiated by his future mother-in-law.
Next hint.
Your main character moves to California to star in a soap opera.
Next hint.
Patrick and Moira.
Schitt's Creek.
Schitt's Creek. Good for one. Back to Sarah. Supporting character works at becoming an architect in the finale.
An architect?
Yes.
So tempting to say the Brady Bunch, but that is not it. Next hint.
your main character passes through the final door.
The Good Place?
The Good Place. Oh. 3 points. Nice.
All right.
Donnie and Eleanor.
Cleaning up.
Whew.
All right, Will, your supporting character in the finale gets the treasure from Skeleton Island.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Good news for that guy or girl. I don't know. What's the main character do?
Retires to Savannah.
Give me the main character names.
All right, here we go. This. Supporting character is Long John Silver, and your main character is Captain Flint.
I don't know. Treasure Island. I don't know.
Well, it's definitely about pirates. That was Black Sails.
Black Sails.
Yeah. Which ran for surprisingly long time, considering nobody ever talked about it. All right. We're getting towards the end of the game. This is for Tara.
Okay.
Your supporting character action in the finale is goes with aliens to Jupiter.
As one does.
Yeah.
Next hint, please.
Your main character stays on as judge.
Third Rock from the Sun?
Oh, good guess.
Your character's names were Bull and Harold, as in Harold T. Stone, as in Nightwart.
Okay.
All right. Everybody's last question is coming at you, so let's hear the scores.
Well, Will's still holding strong with 3 points, but now Sarah and I are tied.
All right. Are you ready, Sarah? Yes.
No.
Your supporting character gets left behind at a hockey practice.
At a hockey practice. Yeah. Next hint.
Your main character takes a train to Montreal. The first draft of Night Gladys Night Song.
I mean, it's go big or lose. So Degrassi.
That's a good guess.
Do you know Tar?
No. Sounds real Canadian, though.
Nope. It is not Canadian. It is, in fact, very Americans. Americans.
Oh,
wow.
That little biatch.
All right.
Well, it is.
Will. Here's your last one. Your supporting character is buried alive in a mysterious cave in Mongolia.
This is Benson, finally.
Okay, so I don't know, but I'm, you know, I gotta get some numbers on the board. I'm just gonna do a little Hail Mary here. Buried alive in Mongolia. Yeah. So, young Indiana Jones.
Yep.
It's not bad.
All right, so your main character takes a walk on the beach with her husband, daughter, and longtime co-worker.
Okay.
Any idea there? You've already answered. But
No idea.
All right, your characters are Arvin and Sydney.
Oh. Love, Sydney.
Close. That is Alias. That is the finale of Alias.
I was like, Melrose?
All right, Tara, you only need to get one point here.
Yeah.
Your supporting character marries an overly talkative wife.
Next.
Your main character wakes up in bed with a former wife.
Is this Newhart?
It is Newhart, and that is good
for three.
The Larry, Daryl, and Daryl all marry overly talkative wives, so that would have applied to any of them. And the main character, of course, is Bob, as in Bob Newhart, the show. All right, let's hear the final scores.
Will finished with 3. Sarah D. Bunting with 10. I had 13.
All right. Well done. 13. I have one more that was going to be the tiebreaker. We'll just play it. First person to shout out the answer wins a little prize. What's it going to be? Who knows? It's a steel meal. All right. Here we go. I will just start reading information. As soon as you think you know the show, just scream it out. It's really just open-ended chaos here. Okay. Here we go. Your supporting character asks Sarah Michelle Gellar for a date.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
No, that would be weird, but I love it. Your main character wins a Nobel Prize.
Big Bang Theory?
Big Bang Theory is correct. I don't know why I buzzed you. because that is in fact correct. One more steel mill to Sarah's giant steel mill collection.
Yeah.
How many do you have? I feel like something's got to happen.
I think I'm at 14 right now.
No, you have 16 steel mills.
At a certain point, they start merging together like Constructicons, and then you got like one big one, and then something really magical happens.
Yeah.
But that means, Tara, guess what? You won.
Tara.
And that's the season. Around. Nothing's ever gonna keep you down. I should learn the rest of the lyrics. It's only the second line.
Water.
Thank you, Will. That is what Will does improv, and I apparently don't.
I mean, the secret to doing improv is get one joke you like and just do it over and over again for the rest of the episode. Not too hard.
Benson, we're on it.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We gathered our meaty sacks of awful and goo together to talk about season 3 of The Boys before going around the Dallas stops at the real world New Orleans, The Expanse, and Top Chef Houston. This is the water, and this is the well, Twin Peaks The Return episode didn't get into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's game and the season. This game from John. Next up, earworms on Extra, Extra Hot Great. And on the next EHG Prime, it is Ms. Marvel. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
gotta wait.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Cunts.
and Will Hines.
A vehicle of good orb.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next time, right here, on Extra Hot Great.
This is the water, and this is the well. Drink full of the sun. A horse is the white of the eyes and dark within.
Oh my God.
A little Sinatra for you?
That was really upsetting.
Yeah.
Frankie fucked up music. All right.
Wow.